Hi there, I'm Michael Hall.
And I'm Andrew Davis.
And we want to welcome you to The D-Advantage, the D&D podcast where two old school dads talk about new school D&D play.
With some dad jokes thrown in.
We got the dad jokes.
I suspect this might be a humor heavy
humor tinge to this episode. It's like, it's all dad jokes, the whole show.
One giant dad joke.
Perfect. That would be actually brilliant. If we could literally do a dad joke a minute, that would be awesome. All right. Today, we're going to do something a little different. We've a number of times in the last couple episodes, we've talked about Andy has built a great little mini campaign, a one shot for anybody really, but also for playing with kids. He built it for a show and where kids were playing, and it's awesome. And we wanted to talk a little bit about it, but we also wanted to talk about what's the process for making your own one shot and publishing it, because I think there are a lot of people out there who aspire to publish in this environment because it's so rich and the ability to do so is so amazing. So I'm going to talk to Andy a little bit about what it took to get this thing going. So Andy, why don't you give us a little start off and just tell us a little bit about your one shot, how it came to be, and then I'll ask you some questions.
The one shot's name is It's Time to Save the Donuts. We may or may not have mentioned on the podcast in the past. I also, in the D&D adjacent space, I make dodeca donuts, which are wooden dice vaults that happen to look like donuts. But this is where the donut idea came from. So my son and I were working Kublai Khan, and I was selling donuts at Kublai Khan, and my son and I were just talking about, oh, it would be interesting to have a donut adventure that we could, you know, share or maybe sell as part of Dodeca Donuts. That would be like an interesting thing to do. And this is in the vein of dad jokes. For all of those who are our age, we all remember the "It's time to make the donuts," Dunkin' Donuts commercials from way back in the day. And so I was like, oh, it's time. Maybe it's time to save the donuts. And then it just turned into, from that little kernel, it turned into, oh, well, what is the story? How might you create a story around the idea of saving the donuts, or in this case, saving the donut shop? And then it just is elaborating on that. So we came up with kind of there's a little set piece at the beginning where the general idea of the campaign is it's meant to sit like between moments in an arc. So it could either be existing characters or other character, or like you could either be existing characters or characters created for this. And it's three acts. So the first act is you and your party are in Waterdeep. You're in downtime between adventures. You're wandering a neighborhood. You discover there's a grand opening going on at Dolly's Donuts. And then you go into Dolly's Donuts, and while you're there, the donuts all animate and start attacking the customers. And so there's this sort of chaotic food fight at the beginning where you have to defeat the donuts and the strawberry jam that comes out of the kitchen, potentially, if you have a strong enough party. And it's just meant to be ridiculous, but kind of like over the top. And then from there, you defeat them. And then the shop owners who, you know, it's Dolly Partheon, who is... and Fred, who is Fred, and Fred Partheon. So Fred is an orc, and Dolly is a half elf, and she looks a lot like Dolly Parton. And they ask you to basically help them discover who's trying to ruin their business. And sort of the second act is investigating. So there are a couple different places that you can go to do that. And then you eventually discover that Waffle Wizards, our proxy for Waffle House, is the manager there, Karen Jones. Karen has decided that she is going to ruin all the other businesses to improve her business as the manager of Waffle Wizards. And so then there are a bunch of, and then from there it was just like, oh, well, let's just make a bunch of like fun NPCs. Let's build out all of that.
And you actually ran this with a bunch of kids at a show as well.
Right? Yeah. So my friendly local game store, shout out to Games of Berkeley, runs what they call GobCon, or Games of Berkeley Con. And they asked us to, I asked them if it would be okay if I ran, like, they were doing some kid friendly stuff. And I was like, hey, I've got this kid friendly module. Is it okay if I run it? And so I ran it for six, or like, how many kids were there? There were I had five players who a couple were very young. One was the mom of one of the players. One was a couple of kids who were more like teens. And so I ran like an early iteration of it with them. Mm-hmm. And then essentially play tested it with them and then used what I'd learned from that to make some adjustments. And then I actually play tested it again with my daughter and some of her friends from college, which was another party of about five people, and then use both of those to kind of make some adjustments to the actual campaign. And then since then, I've been working on getting it tightened up enough to feel comfortable to publish it.
Nice. I love that, Andy. I think if I venture so much as to suppose, like, one of the key things here is just you had an idea and you built a mini campaign around it. And I think that's where every good idea starts, right?
Yeah,
decent idea and you say, especially in the one-shot land, a good hook is really what it takes. You need a good hook.
I think
to get the party interested and get them excited and to accelerate the sort of fun of it as quickly as possible. We've talked a lot about building one-shots in the past and creating interesting games, and it sounds like Time to Save the Donuts has got that primal hook that can really bring people in quickly and get them motivated and give them motivation that doesn't necessarily have to sit inside their character. It can sit external to the characters.
Yeah, exactly. I think we've talked a little bit in the past about the difference between a one-shot versus a longer campaign. Mm-hmm. And I think with a one-shot, so this is the second one-shot that I've published on, or second two-shot that I've published on DM's Guild. And in both cases, they're built on hooks. The first one was Namatoki's Tower, and that one was built basically, could I make Die Hard into a D&D adventure?
Because we're heading to holidays.
Yeah, heading to holidays. It's a Christmas movie. Everybody download Namatoki's Tower. So, you know, it was, and that was a good learning experience because there was a lot of just learning how to write it in the first place was a little challenging, but figured it out. And also found some partners in the process of that. This is a shout out to Andrew Young, who did the editing.
Well, that's a good place to pivot. So like, what are the, like, if for somebody out there, I think a lot of people out there, certainly DMs and people who fashion themselves as such, have an idea about how to run a one shot and how to run a campaign. Yeah. But like, when you start thinking about, okay, I've got an idea for a one shot, now I'm going to, or an adventure hook or whatever it is, I'm going to go turn this into something I want to publish. I can theorize a lot about it. I haven't done it, but I'm in the creative field. So, and as you are, so I have an idea how you go about building a project and structuring the elements of building a creative project. And this is a creative project. Tell me a little bit about how you sort of like the pieces, like what are the chunks of things that you need to do? You mentioned playtesting. That's certainly a piece of it. But what are the chunks of things that you need to create or make or do in order to start to flesh an idea
flesh
from
it all out.
Theory to publishable practice, right?
Yeah.
A lot of us will sort of live DM stuff and just make stuff up as we go. But this is different. This is something that has to be published. So what are the pieces? What are the structure elements?
So I think the first thing is having some familiarity with the general format of, or like the format of what a module might look like, which is generally a little bit different than your notes that you might make for. Certainly for me, my notes for a given session are pretty thin because I expect when I'm talking about like longer campaigns of the Shattered Chasm stuff, I tend to write pretty much just outlines and story beats along with notes around monsters and stuff like that. Yeah.
Or things that you might find, like an artifact.
Things that you might find, or I might make a table or find a link to a table, stuff like that. Yeah. With this, it's just more structured and more detail. So I tend to have an idea for the title of it. I'll write myself like a little two paragraph, almost like pitch to myself of, hey, these are the story beats. It's just like a very quick synopsis of what I think the adventure will be. And then I put together an outline, and that outline is a little more formal than, so it's like, hey, this is what running the adventure is, right? This is what the setting is. It's not something I've seen necessarily in a lot of different stuff, but I like the idea of breaking things into three acts as part of the structure so that you have a beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about that. Particularly the middle one being one that you can drop.
If you need to for timing. So in the case of the time to save the donuts, one, act one is Dolly's Donuts. That's where it starts. So there's a little, so then you build out your outline, and then you're really just fleshing out the outline, mm-hmm. and you're identifying, like, okay, in each one of these scenes, what are the NPCs that I need to have? Who are they? What is their motivation? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's very much like just writing. I don't know. It's not quite like writing a screenplay, but it's like writing
you can go pick up. And at the end of this episode, we're going to make some recommendations around places to look for different source material. But also maybe this is holiday time, we'll also reference some items for good gifts out there in the ecosystem. But you can go download a lot of different one shots and look at the structure of them
Get
a sense of. Even the bigger adventures, you can go look at sort of the structure of any one act within a bigger adventure to see how they do the setup, what's the descriptive pieces, how they build the NPCs. And I think that you hit one of the key things, Andy, is talking about character motivation, because you want to give people a sense of how to we're not saying that you have to role play all the NPCs. Some of us do, some of us don't, but you should understand their motivation in order to determine how they're going to act. And so putting that in there for a DM to leverage is pretty important.
And being very explicit about it. Dolly, what do Dolly and Fred want? Dolly and Fred want to have a successful business, that this is their life's dream. They've always wanted to run a little donut shop, and they finally achieved that. And now their dream is being snatched away. So you can, from there, extrapolate how someone like that might behave, you know, and so then you use that to create some character portraits. For me, it's also really fun to start thinking of, the idea of Dolly Parton mm-hmm. as a sort of proxy. You start being able to come up with fun names or think of fun little archetypes mm-hmm. and sorts of characters, and then they flavor different pieces. And then
that's a great point, Andy. So let's turn that over for a second, because what I heard you say, a singular motivation is important for your NPCs, particularly your prime NPCs, the NPCs that are going to draw. So giving them single motivations is really important. But I also heard you say the juicy word, the flavor word. So creating that, like, the singular motivation is not flavor in and of itself, but then you can situate flavor around that single motivation. I think the analogy that we sometimes sort of display a lot on this show is we'll have a trope, right?
Yeah.
You could substitute trope for motivation in any of our builds. And then just like you can see how we go around building flavor around that motivation. What is that prime thing? But then there's infinite paths to creating flavor and making it fun around it.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think for me, I like puns. Hey, it's all about the dad jokes, right? So we have this central mystery, and we know as we write the outline, we understand, like, oh, okay, the central mystery is Karen is doing her thing. Well, what does she need to be? What sort of NPC or what sort of capabilities does she need in order to be able to animate the flower, in order to create these animated donuts that will attack? Oh, well, she's got to be some sort of wizard. So that stuff starts to define itself based on the outline. So you're sort of figuring all that stuff out. And then you're just layering onto it, like, attitude, the idea of Karen as this middle manager in this corporation of waffle wizards. And what might a person like that, what motivation do they have? What sort of stresses are they under that they would mm-hmm. decide that, you know, attacking other businesses surreptitiously is a good idea? You know,
so it sounds like script is really important, right? The writing, starting with a synopsis, moving toward an outline, moving from outline to depth, and then writing, right? Like a bunch of writing. You mentioned Andrew Young. How did he help you with the writing process? Because I believe that was his key role, right?
Yeah. So Andrew's, his Twitter handle is That1GM. And I found him when I was working on Namatoki's Tower. I looked at and found basically an online course for how to write an adventure. And it's the RPG Writers Workshop, which I can also highly recommend. They have a good structure for just yourself, the process of getting something done and published. as part of that, they have a Discord channel, and I was just pinging out on the Discord channel, hey, I'm looking for an editor. And Andrew and I got connected through that, and or maybe through Twitter too. I think pitched it out on Twitter. But in any case, Andrew and I worked together on Namatoki's Tower, and he basically is a copy editor. So when you're working with an editor, you can have them just do grammatical stuff, or you can also have them work more as like a developmental editor where they're giving you some ideas to tighten things up. So in the case of Namatoki's Tower, Andrew and I worked together pretty closely on some more details. It's a more involved adventure. There's, you know, it's probably three times longer than the one, than It's Time to Save the Donuts. But with this one, I just reached out to him again because we'd had a really good experience. But I waited until, I didn't engage with Andrew until I had a really good, like my outline was complete. I basically had written 80%, 90% of the adventure. And for those people who've never worked with an editor, I basically sent him a link to a Google Doc. And he's going through the Google Doc and commenting on all the things where he sees inconsistencies or grammatical stuff, or if there's things that he thinks are unclear, he's flagging those and sometimes making suggestions to make them more clear. And then, but me as the writer, I get to choose which of those I accept or decline. So there's some stuff that there's a lot of stuff that he offered up that I was like, hey, that's a great suggestion. I'm going to accept that. But there were a couple of things where I was like, oh, you know what? I know where I'm headed with this, and that's, I don't need to worry about that as much. So I set those comments aside.
So I think that you've just illustrated a role in this ecosystem that a lot of people aren't aware of, just the idea of an editor. It sounds like it's a pretty important part of the process. I'm a firm believer that editors can really help. Whether you hire an editor or whether you find someone who can play that role for you, it's an important piece of the puzzle, because you have to, as a writer, particularly for something that's being published for purchase, you need a second eye on this.
Yeah. And I think there are a lot of people who produce stuff for DMs Guild and they don't necessarily hire an editor. Mm-hmm. Maybe they have a friend who can act as an editor, or they just are showing it to a bunch of people. But in general, for me, given my circumstances and all that stuff, it's pretty nominal expense. Mm-hmm. It was just a few hundred dollars to have Andrew kind of look at all this stuff. And he was very upfront about pricing. It's all, there are established structures in, they look, as an editor, he can look at word count and say, hey, it's going to be roughly this. And that's, right. Which is great. And that's so,
great. But, so people, so Andy, sorry, like people out there who might be hiring a writer rather than an editor, is it pretty much the same process? Like you go out there and find somebody who can write for you?
Yeah, again,
it's a word count, basically, that price per word.
Yeah, right? I mean, if you were hiring a writer, I think hiring a writer versus hiring an editor, I've never had to hire a writer for something mm-hmm. like this. But if you were hiring a writer, if you had like a really good idea and you had put together an outline, if you were to hire a writer, it would be more expensive. They're going to charge more per word, essentially, to actually write the thing. And you might still want to engage a copy editor just to work with them. The writing process is very creative. The copy editing process is about roping some of that creativity down and giving it the structure it needs to be comprehensible. Yeah, and you typically need two different people to do that. And it's good, but you certainly could find a writer. There are lots of good resources. Like I said, RPG Writer Workshop, great. There are a couple of other places. I think DMs Guild, if you get onto their Discord, you can also find writers and stuff like that who would be interested in helping.
Amazing.
You out.
A great, great resource. I want to pivot a little bit, but let's pivot around this idea of creativity. Hiring creative people.
Yep.
Please respect your creators out there. I think it's really easy, particularly for people who are new to the creative process, to unintentionally abuse the creator in terms of volume of edits. Particularly if you're hiring people who are less experienced in the creative process, they may not know how to advocate for themselves. If you encounter somebody who's a strong advocate for themselves, listen to them. They're probably a pro. What are just one or two things you should be negotiating up front, and then we're going to pivot to art, because I think it'll lead in well into art. What are one or two things that you should be aware of as you bring more creative people into the fold for this type of process?
So
as a creator yourself, Andy.
As a creator myself, yes. Typically, when I think it's really important to be very upfront with everyone around your expected scope and your, so you want to, as the person who's initiating the project. So in my case, I'm writing this outline. If I were not comfortable actually writing the adventure and I wanted to hire a writer, then what I'm going to identify two or three possibilities, and I'm basically going to provide them the outline and then ask them to give me an estimate on what they think it's going to take to write this thing. And as part of that estimate, they should be telling you, hey, it's going to be, I'm going to write it a first draft. I'm going to write this many iterations of a draft, right? I'm going to write the first draft. You're going to provide comments. I'm going to deal with those comments or make adjustments. Then you and the editor might provide comments. And then there would be like a final draft. You might do three or four drafts. And based on that, and based on the expected word count, they should be able to provide you a pretty solid estimate as to what the costs are. And I think in general, you should have a budget in mind. You are, as a creator, my time is, unfortunately, it's not free. We don't live in a world. It's just respectful to honor people's time and their engagement with it. The reality is if you can't afford to hire a writer, then you should learn the skills to write it yourself.
Understand that there's a cost that people out there who are charging for building things are charging based on the time it takes them to do it, or they should be. And every minute is actually not free, literally down to the minute. Just be ready for that. I'll be honest about it and communicate. Number of rounds of edits is both in the writing process and in the visual process. How many rounds can you expect? And be respectful. I think just be honest and respectful.
And I think, at least in California, having an estimate, it is once the work's been accepted and you've started to pay for it, whether that's in a deposit or whatever the creator's requirements are around that, you are on the hook for that money. So you really want to make sure that you're respectful to them. On the other hand, if you're not getting the work product that you expect from a creator, it is okay to say, you know what, hey, this is not what I expected. I'm not seeing what I want. I will pay you for the work that you've done so far, and you can end the relationship.
Yeah,
and
I think that's
move
it.
On so to
it,
the other thing, you know,
understand the scope and have a good out clause that's mutually acceptable to all parties are really important pieces of just the basics of getting this stuff done. So let's talk about moving over to the art side, because we've talked a little bit about the writing, both structure and then how to find either writers or editors, or what to expect when you're working with writers or editors. I know you had a special circumstance with your art, but the same sort of applies going into the art side of the house, right?
Yep. In my case, some of the art that's in the adventure, like the cover illustration, the maps, and some of the building drawings were drawings that I did based on the descriptions I'd written in there.
I am a creator.
Yeah. I'm a creator that I went to art school. I kind of understand how to draw. So I'm able to do some of that stuff, but I'm not particularly good at drawing figures or anything else like that. Mm-hmm. So in this case, I actually hired my daughter, who is an illustration major in school, but I hired her. So she has been paid to supply the illustrations. And in this case, I gave her the character descriptions for Dolly and Fred, and then for the four people at the Flo and Karen and Squiggy and Chuck, I gave her the descriptions of those characters because I'd come up with these characters that I felt were pretty singular. I wanted to have like a nice, cool illustration for each of those characters. And she did a fantastic job.
Yeah, the illustrations are great.
Yeah, so she did some quick. And in that case, it was much the same thing. She gave me sketches, just black and white line drawings of sketches. And I came back to her and I was like, hey, I need characters repositioned slightly. Fred needs to be, she'd initially drawn Fred as this very lean guy, and I was like, hey, Fred is a baker who's chunky, so we need to like make him a little bit more heavy set. Same thing with Karen, like her initial drawing of Karen was more svelte, and I was like, no, Karen needs to be a little more. She did a great job of kind of interpreting exactly, you know, how all
you
that
what,
goes.
Would I recommend Andy out there, and if you haven't worked with illustrators in particular, it's hard, right? Because you have hard to give them the right brief, hard to give them feedback that is actually doesn't just go into endless loops of feedback, move this, change that. I would almost recommend if you haven't done this, you should go out and hire an illustrator to do one of your original characters once or twice out there in the ecosystem, just to understanding and fine tune your ability to give creative art direction to those people and see if you definitely can practice in a low charged environment where you've got an OC that you want to illustrate. I've done, I've done like five or six OC commission pieces just because, again, I wanted to sort of see how do I work with somebody who charges $50 for an OC? How do I work with someone who charges $150 for an OC? Like the, there are a lot of different illustrators out there at different price points, and understanding how to work with them is part of this process in order to succeed.
You know, and I do want to say also that on, especially on the art side, this is, this has been published on DM's Guild. DM's Guild has a whole section on resources for creators, which includes, frankly, really excellent, some really excellent stock art, art that basically, now this is art that anyone can use for any of their adventures, but especially if you're doing something, you know, you're doing your first couple of adventures, perfectly acceptable if you need, hey, you know what, I want a really spectacular picture of a dragon over a castle attacking because that's the central conflict in my campaign. You can find that or find a couple different things and hook them together in Photoshop or some Photoshop and Procreate or something. And that's perfectly acceptable for a first try at this. The template that this is all, I downloaded the InDesign template that all of this stuff is laid out in because I just didn't feel like figuring out all of the specifics to make it look more like those classic
D&D. That's a good point. So let's talk about the tools of the trade, Andy. So we've talked a little bit about working with artists at a high level and respecting them and using them. But let's talk about, okay, so building it out in tools. Again, this might be something you might hire a graphic designer to do as well.
Exactly.
If you don't feel confident in your design skills. And you went to art school. I went to art school as well. We both got trained as designers. So like, we're pretty well aware of the tools. But let's talk a little bit about the tools and,
How so, this works. So in my case with Namatoki's Tower, I went online and found I'm super comfortable in InDesign. But again, that's like a professional tool set. I went and looked at a whole bunch of
Adobe InDesign.
Yes, Adobe InDesign. So I went and looked at a whole bunch of templates, again, because I was really interested in just getting it. I wanted to get it to a place where it was finished and that I would feel comfortable, that I could feel comfortable publishing it at a level that I was happy with. And I looked at a whole bunch, but there are templates for Word that have already been laid out. So if you're comfortable in Microsoft Word, you can figure that out. There are a lot of different options available. And there are also people, graphic designers, who if you say, hey, I've got it all done, I've got all the art, I've got all the rest of it, you can hire them to lay something out. In my case, again, this is one of those things where it's like, you know, how, as you think about the budget and your skills, I would really encourage people to try to take a run at every part of it. Take a run at writing it. Take a run at creating the artwork for it. Take a run at laying it out and figuring that stuff out. Because those are like, they're just great skills to have, if only to understand how to better provide direction to the people who might do it for you in the long run.
Nothing will teach you the respect for the skills these people are bringing than trying to do it yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a little easier, I think, to get there quickly with drawings. Like if you can't draw, you try to draw and you quickly realize that you can't draw and you're like, oh, okay. I need
but you know what? I mean, it's also
but all the other skills are important too.
It's like, at the end of this, I think we'll talk about a bunch of different adventures that are on DM's Guild. There are some of them that have, frankly, pretty crude illustrations and stuff like that. And if you look at the original, you look at the original D&D books, the illustrations in those are not great, right? But they're evocative. And so you should feel comfortable about that stuff. We should also add into the thing of artwork is also maps, right? And like the creation of the maps for your adventures. So, and might be a whole another episode about maps, but in my case, so in my case, there are really only two key maps in this particular adventure, one for Dolly's and one for Waffle Wizards. And that's their own little subset of creation, which can be a lot of fun. But in those cases, I drew them in on graph paper and took a photograph and scanned them and then turned that into Photoshop documents.
Yeah, I think that's
a
great way to do it. I think certainly for the maps in DM Guild, that's a great way to do it. Although you can also provide VTT assets as part of your package and VTT being virtual tabletop.
And so that is actually
20 or whatever.
Yeah, that is actually one of the considerations. Like, I need to, anyone who's downloaded Namatoki's Tower, any of you found this, like, I've had the main comment on all of that is like, hey, can you provide the maps as a map bundle? And I've said, yes, I can. And I still haven't gotten around to it. So I have to, one of the things that I'm probably going to try and do for this holiday season is get that actually uploaded. Yeah.
And again, if you're trying to sell this, it's an add-on that you can charge for, right? So that's pretty cool, Andy. I think we've given everybody sort of a sense of like the pieces of the creative process, right? There's the writing and the components of the writing. There's the illustration and the components of getting the visuals right, which can play a huge portion, actually. And if there's any one thing that will sell your campaign probably better than almost anything else, it's your synopsis and description, but also your visuals will help sell quite a bit. As we all know, you just go to your own experience. What do you buy? You buy based on the cover of the book, right?
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
That's really important. So value those. And then layout and design, which is actually equally important to somebody enjoying and being able to actually enjoy the purchase after they've purchased it.
Exactly.
So all these things are really important. You can do it yourself. We recommend you try doing it yourself, but you can hire people to do it.
And
your creators.
And again, I would say DM Guild is a really good resource for identifying some free stuff that, or not even just stuff that you, not even necessarily free, but low cost assets that you might be able to use to enhance your overall.
Well, then let's talk for a second about uploading it on DM Guild, and then let's give some recommendations out there. So, like, what's your experience with getting stuff live on DM Guild? Things that you need to know.
So, this is not a huge ding. DM Guild was originally developed in like 2001 or something like that. I mean, it's pretty old from a interface perspective. So it can be a little twitchy, and they do have some. So like in this case, I had forgotten I had initially put a Dodeca Donuts logo on the front cover, and I had just forgotten that they don't want any logos other than the DM's Guild logo on the front cover. And there has to be a DM's Guild logo on the front cover if it's going to be published through DM's Guild. There are other platforms you can use. Itch.io, I think a lot of people use. Patreon, you can just basically publish PDFs through those things. But DM's Guild is by far the largest resource. But part of that is if you're doing stuff through DM's Guild, you're agreeing to use the open gaming license from Wizards. You're agreeing to publish it, and they take a certain, by publishing it there, they take a certain percentage of whatever you make on the PDF. Yeah,
and they create a findability for it.
They also create a platform that will supply all the stuff. It's like making a product and putting it on Etsy. It's a marketplace that it makes it a lot easier to have your stuff be discovered.
People on DM's Guild are looking for D&D stuff.
exactly. And as a marketer, that's something that you want to do that. There are a lot of other things on DM's Guild. They have DriveThruRPG, they have DriveThruComics, they have a whole bunch of other things that they service, but DM's Guild is, I think, probably the biggest and certainly the most relevant to what we're talking about. And then they have a whole bunch of ranking systems. They have a copper, electrum, silver, gold, platinum, and adamantine tiers. So depending on how a product sells, you move up into those tiers, which make things a little more discoverable. In those, you can search stuff based on, are you looking for adventures? Are you looking for variations on homebrew core rules? Are you looking for bundles of things? And bundles of things, honestly, are a great way to just get a whole bunch of different sorts of content and see what's going on. They have a near infinite variety of different character options, different ways to think about how you make characters. They've got all kinds of gear and magic item rule sets that you can download for your table. They have a lot of, like I said, these resources for DMs, DM creators, and media. And then they have a relatively new section, which is Tabletop Essentials, which is stuff for virtual tabletops, which is, again, super interesting. And when you create a product, you're going to log into your account. And this is where there's not as much support here as I would have liked to have, certainly in my case. But when you get into the My Account section, you would go down to, there's a section called My Content. You create a new community created title. And then within that, they're going to ask you a whole bunch of information, a little synopsis, the title, what kind of content is it? Where does it fit into that ecosystem? You fill all that stuff out. You agree to the publishing contract, essentially. And then you hit save. And then from there, you would upload things like cover art, the PDF that's actually behind the thing. You could put versions on it, version 1, version 0.1, 1.1, stuff like that. And then there's a whole bunch of stuff down below that where you can edit the title, you can upload your files, stuff like that. There's a bunch of author settings, promotion tools. So they do have a pretty complete tool set. The interface is not awesome for like understanding what you're doing. And in my case, because I initially had published this thing with the Dodeca Donuts logo on it, it got bounced back when they reviewed it. So it was initially up and then someone reviewed it, saw the logo and marked it back as private. But there was not a lot of clear communication in the interface about what was going on. So the initial note about that got bounced into my spam folder, and it took me a little while to figure that out and then get it updated and then get it republished. It's good. It's not super awesome. But on the other hand, I now have $2.50 in my account that I can use. And then when you talk about pricing for these things, they have two options. You can set a price. So I've set a price of $2.99 for this. But you can also do pay what you want. So I typically do give a price that's usually pretty low, and then I say pay what you want. So some people will download it for free and not pay anything, and some people will. And in my case, this is not my livelihood, so I don't have to worry so much about turning it into something that I'm really
trying to feed your family on it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm doing it because
trying to feed our families on this podcast.
It's for fun.
Probably would do it anyway. Awesome. Well, I think any of that gives people a really good clear picture on how to do this. Give a sense of some of the titles that you might recommend people looking at on DriveThru on DM's Guild to purchase.
So there are literally like thousands and thousands of titles on DM's Guild. So I was just looking through there.
It's a little overwhelming, in fact.
Yeah, it can be a little overwhelming. I was looking through the stuff that I have downloaded in the past, and then also the stuff that's sitting in their top 100. So the one I saw, a bunch of one shots that I thought were interesting. One is an elf and an orc had a little baby, which is, I think, a more family friendly. I think there's also
I've seen that one. That one looks really fun.
Yeah. And then there's another one, which I couldn't find off the top of my head, but I know it's essentially like an ogre bakes a cake is the general premise. And it's like, I have seen a couple of reviews of it where they're just like, it is a spectacular kid friendly one shot. And I will try to track down the URL for a lot of these. On like the more spooky side of things, I saw a thing, One Night Strahd, which essentially is taking like Barovia, like the whole Barovia, which is this massive campaign, and kind of bringing it down into like one, like into a one shot, which I have no idea how they did have that, how they've done it.
I was actually going to take a look at that one.
It looked kind of interesting. There's also a Night of Fright, which is like a Scooby-Doo themed adventure, I thought was like pretty hilarious. But on the resources side, there is a series called Uncaged, which the art is spectacular. The writing's really good. It's like each one is like five or six one shots each volume. And I think there are like three volumes of it. Super interesting. There is another one that I have picked up, but I haven't had a chance to look at it too closely. It's called Doomed Forgotten Realms. Mm-hmm. And the central premise of it is, what if the bad guys had won in every one of the published adventures up until, I think, Beyond the Witchlight?
Oh, wow.
So it's like, what if Tiamat had won in the first one? And what if Strahd? Like, I mean, it's just, it's super, it's very, very interesting. It's like the premise is amazing.
I love it.
And so they've just completely...
And you listed a whole bunch, two that I'd heard of that I want to check out, and then that I hadn't heard of. I'm going to go check that out. And even then, just for inspiration, that sounds
great. Yeah. And then the last one that I'm going to pitch out there, and this is like just super nerdy. There's a guy on TikTok who, like, through his TikTok community, he's a mathematician, and he's gone and written a paper called The Theory of Magic, where he's worked out the math behind Gygaxian magic in D&D to explain math and theory based on, and it's completely made up, but it is super, it's just such a nerdy thing where they've written an actual math paper. I am not a mathematician at all, but I just, I was like, okay, I gotta like support
it. It is all about the math. I might actually go check that out too, because I am a little bit, I can pretend to be a math nerd. All right. I've got a couple that are like less about DMs Guild and more just about if you're out there looking for third-party content, some strong shout-outs actually that might actually, since this is holiday time, give you some good holiday gift ideas for the D&D lovers out there in your life. I cannot recommend enough the Tome of Beasts series from Cobalt Press. Yeah. They are really well done, well-balanced monsters. I use them pretty heavily in order to prevent metagaming amongst my players, because it's generally monsters that they might know of or come from Pathfinder, but they just don't know them that well, so they can't metagame around them. I'm also just a fan of just scouring through, and actually I recommend getting the hardcover books, because there's nothing better than just flipping through pages and getting ideas. And they can really spark great ideas. Seeing new monsters out there in the ecosystem can really spark new ideas. They just released Tome of Beasts 3. I think it just finished its Kickstarter and its mailing, so that should be available for purchase soon. So Tome of Beasts 1, 2, and 3. And then there's the Creature Codex. There's a couple of them. So they're all really good. The monsters are well thought through.
It's all very high quality content. They're a publishing, they're right up there with Paizo and Wizards in terms of their quality. Yeah. And it's really,
it can be a little inconsistent at times, because they'll reference some of their things that you might not know much about. Like they sometimes reference rune magic, which is something that's in a lot of their campaign stuff. But it's, again, really solid stuff. And some of their campaigns are fantastic as well. They have good packages.
They have I think Midgard is one of their settings, which is super interesting. And then there's another one that is more horror themed that I think is also pretty interesting.
And then I'll recommend a smaller third party press called Kaywood Publishing that I like, who I've bought a couple things from. And I really like them mostly just because they have their illustration style, like talking about art assets and being motivated by art assets. I just love their illustration style. It really is evocative and different from the standard D&D style illustration. I'm a little more comic booky, which I appreciated and really like their stuff. So I've bought their stuff. And then outside of the game stuff, just D&D tchotchkes and things like that, I'm gonna throw a recommendation out there for Found Familiar Coffee. It's a coffee publisher. I think they're in Kansas City. They're somewhere in the center of the country, and I can't remember. Maybe Colorado. Whatever. But like, this woman creates coffee and roast coffee and has really great illustrations on the bags of coffee, and it's D&D themed coffee. And I've actually ordered it, and I'm a coffee snob, and it's some good coffee, so like I can't recommend it enough. And then they've got other things like t-shirts and cups and things like that are very just with great illustrations on it.
Awesome.
I think those are really the places. Oh, of course, Keith Ammerman, monsters know what they are doing. I can't recommend Keith enough. His books are seminal if you are a DM and want to understand how to do a better job around being a DM and really giving your monsters motivation and tactics that actually befit them.
Yeah. I mean, and he does. I mean, his blog is a great follow, too, even if you're not into the books. He just recently did a whole series where he basically looked at the new stat blocks that had come out in the updated monster manual and updated his strategy recommendations from the books. I mean, it's just really, really interesting stuff.
He's a nice guy. And generous of spirit if you follow him on socials, and just really smart about the game.
Yeah. I have just a couple quick other things to recommend.
Wait, before you do, Andy, I'm going to recommend Dodeca Donuts.
What?
Well, because Dodeca Donuts are cool. I've got a couple. I use them to keep my dice safe and donut flavored. So, of course, Dodeca Donuts and Time to Save the Donuts should be on people's lists as well.
Thank you. You don't have to promote your own stuff. I won't have to promote my own stuff. So I was going to say, in the vein of tchotchkes that are just kind of fun, is there's a company called Cantrip Candles, which is down in LA. And they're just making really lovely, scented candles, which are great for mood setting, but they're also just like a good gift for someone who is in the sort of D&D or D&D adjacent spaces. They've got a whole bunch of different stuff. It's super fun. And then the other one I was going to recommend, which is not a paid thing so much, is there is a guy on Patreon as Z4250, And he started out during COVID, just decided to teach himself 3D modeling. And he started creating all these free to download STLs for all of the basic monsters in the monster manual. Yeah. And he has since built this whole community where he is producing all kinds of stuff. And a big chunk of his models are free to download, all the stuff that's in the open gaming license. So if you're interested in minis and you have a 3D printer, he's just an awesome resource.
Yeah, look at his stuff. He gives different styles of the same thing. I mean, it's pretty impressive.
He's just got he's just turned it into basically his full-time job. And he's
with a helmet, without a helmet.
He's just producing all this stuff. And there are there's Hero Forge, which is another pay to print or pay to download an STL of custom characters if you want to create custom character minis if you're playing at the table. And then the last thing I would recommend is always, even above all this stuff, is your friendly local game store.
Yes. Support your game stores, people.
Support your game stores. So I know that it is Amazon's constantly running really good deals on books. And of course, there are some people who don't have easy access to a game store. But if you can, I would say I try to preferentially go to
my physical books wherever I can from a game store.
Yeah, if I can. Yeah, if I can. There are cases, there are times when I've bought them from Amazon, but in general, I want to support them. And they're also, if you're looking for minis or you're looking for paints and stuff like that, there really is nothing better than seeing those things in person and kind of understanding scale and
exactly and talking to your game store employees who may be grumpy but know everything.
The grumpy local game, the GLGS, the grumpy local game store.
Well, it's like Reality Bites, or not Reality Bites, High Fidelity.
Yes,
like the old record store grumpy people.
Yeah, that's
nice. All right, well let's wrap this up because we're at time. So Andy, I think I'm gonna do the dad joke today.
Okay,
so hey Andy, some people think rolling for stats is outdated.
Really?
I think it builds character.
Jesus. I like it. Very very on point. It also builds non-player character.
Oh, yeah. All right, people. Thank you so much. You can find us on the socials. Watch Twitter go down in flames with us.
We're at the_dadvantage until it implodes, at which point we may be on Mastodon. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. And then where are we on Facebook, Andy?
And we are the Dead Vantage podcast on Facebook. Excellent. Soon to be more active than ever.
Yeah, right? Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. Happy holidays. Hope you get some D&D in. This is the hard time of year to get your game going.
Yeah, so my God, keep it's your so games tough.
Going. And we'll talk to you. We'll keep talking to you. We got a bunch of good stuff coming.
Yep. Awesome. Talk to you
Thanks
soon.
Thanks, all.